Welcome to Dread, Fright, and Brew, where your favorite horror movies are paired with craft brews and ciders from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Your hosts this evening are Aaron Hatfield, Grace Schrick, and Lee Despain. Fear goes better with beer.
Moon Moose, man. It's all about the Moon Moose.
Yeah.
Super easy.
Ask Homer Simpson, dude.
Slip right into that sucker.
We should have National Moon Moo Day, just where everybody wears a Moon Moo.
If they made like all black Moon Moos with skulls or like horror movies on it,
I'm sure they do.
Oh, dude, that's just a trip to like Fabric Depot.
I
could probably make a Moo Moo.
Like $8 and you cut a hole in the center.
If I'm going to do that, I'm just going to go for a toga and just buy the bolt and wrap it around.
Moo moves out on everything, dude.
Put a belt on it.
12, moo moves 13 on pounds on it.
Moo moves on everything.
Mm-hmm. Moo moves on everything.
When it down, moo moves out.
When it... shit.
What?
Well, you know, when it down, moo moves out.
Wear them out, dude.
Oh,
jug. I fucking love that.
That's pretty great. See if we can remember that. That'll come up at some weird moment.
Yeah.
When we're all drunk in some other city.
Are we recording?
When down, moves out.
Yes.
Well, I imagine it'll be
I'm in,
checking
levels because it's like way too loud right now. But
2 a.m. in line for Universal at some point.
Just going to play the movie.
That sounds about right.
We should fucking have like, Halloween Universal. Like,
oh, no, we're not going to actually wear muumuus. That's just when it would come up. You can wear a muumuu.
Yeah, if we had matching ones.
Fucking muumuu at the park? Are you kidding
me? You know, I've seen a lot of, like, podcast swag that you can get, like, shirts and hats and
You're
buttons.
Not making Dread, Fright, and Brew muumuus.
Dude. Dread, Fright, and Brew muumuus. Dread, Fright, and Brew muumuus.
Shit.
Coming soon.
I officially quit the podcast?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is my record.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
I'm out. Have fun, idiots.
You can still get a muumuu.
We'll
get you one.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Only if it's monogrammed.
Here's your parting gift.
Absolutely right, yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Thanks for all your day. Here's your muumuu.
Thanks so for crazy. Your real work.
Your brumu.
Brumu.
Are there other bullet points on that? Oh, Jesus.
Gotta get it right.
Nerd!
So, yeah, this is one of those movies where... You know, God, why do we keep doing movies like this where, you know, you want to be really careful not to ruin everything, at least without some kind of a spoiler alert? Because...
I feel like we can't really even get into this movie and the, like, deepness of this movie without...
I think we can get into it in a nice, healthy way, and then about halfway through this here cast of pods,
we're gonna
just
have
go...
To...
Okay,
rip
stop
that
listening
Band-Aid
now
off.
If you haven't
yeah.
seen it.
Like, right now we say...
Come back
spoiler
later.
Alerts coming up. Go watch the movie,
yeah.
And then come the back up, because we're going to fuck this shit up.
Because we're going to ruin this shit for you, yeah. And even then, we're still not going to ruin the real, real secret.
The real, reals, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, you're...
Oh, there goes again.
Oh my God, Wob was going to be so mad at this DVD, because he put the DVD in, and he had to... he kept putting the remote down.
Yeah.
And then it was like, widescreen, full screen. He's like, damn it!
Oh, yeah.
So then he puts that down, and then he goes back, and then it's all... theatrical version, uncut version. He's like, why is that like having to push
there
extra
too many
buttons?
Choices?
No,
yes, too many choices.
It made him mad.
Well, it's because we have, as a people, made the choice. Wide screen, motherfuckers, and director's cut.
Yeah.
Just put it on the disc that way, please.
It's like watching a movie.
Obviously, that's the way we watched it.
Yeah.
So if anybody watched the theatrical,
I had the same thing happen recently.
But
put
it was
on
really funny how frustrated he got.
That was ancient as all hell. And I was like, oh my God, I forgot how,
like how you easy to, you had it back in the
you
day.
You had the side B on your DVD that you had to like flip it for the like regular screen version.
Wow. Yeah. I have some of those.
Yep. Yeah. Or some of them hid like bonus features on one side only because the movie was 10 minutes shorter or some crap.
It's like filled the spotlight all the way up to the
It's like fucking watching a movie that has like that sort of beginning studio credit, and then you think, oh, now the movie's going to start. And then they show a scene that there's actually
all the false starts.
Another
it's really just
film.
That doc thing again.
Everyone's like, intro is like a short film.
Yeah. It's 30 minutes later,
plot,
you're like...
characters that you're invested in. It's like Amblin Entertainment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
there's no beer in that glass.
Well, see, that's the great thing about the whole Blue. We've got a bottle of booze. That's the great thing about the Blu-ray is that you can surf through all that crap while enjoying the movie.
That's true.
So nice. I don't know why I'm touting this like it's new technology.
I don't know, but yeah. I found it really entertaining.
Everybody out there, you should get on board with this Blu-ray thing.
One, gosh.
I don't want choices.
I think it's going to be the one we choose. What was the other one? Because I remember going through that war. It was Blu-ray or...
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It was...
It was just like the Betamax VHS war, yeah. But this was going to be where DVDs went.
But it had a generic name. It was like
Blu-ray or HD.
Oh, HD DVD.
Just simply HD DVD. That's
what it was. DVD, yeah. Yeah. First off, Blu-ray has the cool Viking runes. No, that's Bluetooth.
I don't know what you're talking
the logo
about.
For
you're
Bluetooth.
Doing a really good job right now.
The logo for Bluetooth is a Viking rune. But anyway, Blu-ray's still better, even without that. Oh, who's getting the...
Mine.
Okay, good. Let's kind of don't give it to Lee again. She likes give the Lee spunk. A fighting chance.
She likes the spunk.
Yeah, she can absolutely have the fucking just shot on that.
That is right. So, the movie
I have a feeling Lee's
going to
love this enough as it is. But
I think so. I think I like it.
The aromas.
Oh, yeah. There's a good like wild scent right there.
But our movie tonight that we will be doing is 2003's thriller / slasher, I think. I think watching it again a couple times, it follows just about all the rules of a slasher.
Okay.
But in, the guise of a thriller, of a mystery, a whodunit.
I mean, you take away the hockey mask, and it's a bunch of slashing.
In
a very unique way.
And so we're going to dive into that. But this one's got a lot of...
Which was the movie Identity.
I never
actually identified what movie we were watching.
Yeah, we get a little worse at this every time.
That is for sure.
And by we, I mean me, mainly. Yeah, 2003's Identity. And what beer have we paired with this?
Oh, yeah, that's me.
This wondrous
film. Urban Family Brewing Company.
Aaron Eckhart.
What is it? Marigold, Washington? Something? What's the name of the neighborhood up in Seattle?
It Magnolia. Is Magnolia.
I knew it was some sort of weird flowers with an M. Whatever. Magnolia area of Seattle, which I don't know where the hell that is. Whatever, it's Seattle. They do a bunch of kind of small batch farmhouse cool shit. This particular one that we are pairing with it is called Duality. It is a fruiter age for extended period atop 1,000+ pounds of local nectarines from Collins Family Orchards. They source all of their fruit locally, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
An allowed bottle condition with their house culture for 2 months. Comes in at 8%. So basically it's a kind of wild fermented, fruiter aged, sour
super
with a crap ton of nectarines.
Super just sour. A few nectarines. Yeah, 1,000 pounds?
Oh yeah, 1,000+ pounds is what it says. But like on the side of the bottle, it's all fruiter aged sour ale with a copious amount of nectarines.
It has a copious amount.
I was just going to make some smart ass comment, but I realized that it's going to be harder to not give away spoilers about the movie.
Yeah. I figure we'll be careful for a good bit, as long as we can, and then we're just going to have to dump it out there and say, hey, watch yourself, because here
this
we go.
This one is definitely tart. Yeah.
It is a tart.
It is. But the nectarine, so much flavor to it.
Yeah, you get a lot of the nectarine, and I think some of the tart are, it's the wild fermentation, and you get that sour bacteria, but also I think you get a little bit of that tannic tart from, like, the nectarine skins.
Mm.
So it's kind of fun.
Mm. We're all sitting around on our head like, oh, yeah. That's what we thought, too.
Going on.
Yeah, it's that tannic.
There's different levels of tart.
First lips.
But it's really fruity and bright and pretty.
The color is gorgeous.
Yeah.
The color is absolutely amazing.
And it has a 3D
I'm
gonna
label. Try it without too.
Is that what we figured out? It was a 3D label?
It certainly seems to be. So Grace was the one that noticed
totally
this. The label for it is just a black label with kind of some red and blue silhouetted butterfly moth.
They're moths.
Moth, okay. And
it's made very clear that they're moths, but I couldn't find any reason why.
I don't know.
But moths have all kinds of weird meanings, so who the hell knows?
Maybe the duality.
I think the duality
first you're
thing.
A caterpillars, and then later you're a... But I mean,
Yeah.
And so we pulled out some 3D glasses out of my Nightmare on Elm Street box set that came with one of the films there. And sure enough, it looks like those moths pop off that label.
I feel like they'd be a lot more 3D if it was on a white background.
Yeah, the black.
But they're a little bit 3D, which makes me happy.
It is pretty cool, though.
Because it's kind of random.
Completely random. But that also would make sense with the duality.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually the duality pairing will make sense as we talk about this film a little bit more.
Yeah.
As well.
Not necessarily the moths, per se. Yeah, sure. But I agree with you, though, on the white background, because back when I was maybe 10 or 11, I had a sweet-ass werewolf poster.
I'm glad you didn't stop right there.
I have a sweet-ass... I had a sweet-ass werewolf poster, and it was just a white poster, and it just had a line drawing of the werewolf, Lon Chaney's werewolf, and it was a 3D. And son of a bitch, man, it did. It just flew right out of the screen. I mean, that was magic back then.
Good grief.
That's kind of cool.
That poster would be worth billions of dollars.
Oh, right no now. Shit.
Like a 100, 200-year-old poster.
Probably should have kept
it. God damn it.
No. That was back during the Depression.
Here, I thought you were taking a genuine interest.
That was during the Depression. It's all right.
No, actually, the poster does sound very awesome, but I've never actually seen the art for that, I don't think.
Could you imagine if your adult self could go back in time and say, hey, young self, don't ever play with anything ever?
Oh, yeah. My young self would be like, get out of here, fat dude.
Fat, bald, scary guy.
Take your bullshit ideas with you.
Stranger danger.
I can't remember when I switched from like, I'm going to tear open every package and play with it to, oh my God, this has to stay in the package. Like I don't really recall where that was. It was after Transformers and after G.I. Joe and all those unfortunate things that I wish I still had.
Right.
All the Star Wars. You know when I think it was? Honestly, I think it was right about the time I got hooked on comic collecting. Mm. Because then keeping things pristine on a cardboard, in a bag, in a box.
That makes a lot of sense. Because nobody thought toys were going to be that.
No. But it kind of changed my brain on collecting. I'll bet it was about that time. Comics.
Whew. Damn, this is tart.
It's so good, though.
I can't stop drinking it.
It's really good.
I was going to say, you're like over halfway done with it.
Lee, you might develop a taste for the...
Oh, shut your whore mouth. That'll never happen.
Sours.
Really?
I don't know.
Well, let's talk for a second about Urban Family Brewing. So they started in 2011 as a 25-tap... public house, basically. They kind of always knew that they wanted to do their own brewing. It was three home brewers from Washington, D.C. that moved out here to do it. A little bit less than a year goes by, and they start releasing beers under Urban Family Brewing's name, which were kind of the same as what we're having now, just wild farmhouse style, kind of Belgian slash French inspired beers. And they very quickly realized they were going to outgrow that space that they had for their brewing capacity. So they opened a tasting room and a larger production facility in the Magnolia neighborhood. They originally, I guess, opened up in Ballard. And again, I'm pretty sure those two neighborhoods are like literally next to each other. Like, I think it's only a couple miles that spans both of those neighborhoods. So they didn't move far, but they opened up.
I'm going to nod like I know that.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember my Seattle map.
Me trying to navigate Seattle is laughable.
Yeah. I know that both of those are over to the west of downtown, and I think they're slightly southwest of downtown. I think you have to hop a bridge, actually, if you're like in downtown proper to get to those neighborhoods. So I want to say it was down in the neighborhood where we found like Schooner Exact and those kinds of things.
I wasn't there on that trip, and I haven't been there.
But I'm not positive. Anyways, we'll load up a map.
We'll figure it out.
In 2016, their brewery changed ownership. And in 2017, they brought in a new co-head brewer to work with Mr. Chadwick, who was their previous head brewer, from New Belgium, a guy by the name of Isaac Koski. So nice. He came all the way out from Colorado to work with them. So that is pretty cool. I've never been to their space. It looks cool. You know, I checked out some photos of it and things like that. I definitely want to put it on my list of to-dos.
Again.
Website called Eater.com did a feature on Seattle breweries, and they said that Urban Family Brewing is quietly making some of the best beer in the city right now, focusing primarily on French and Belgian farmhouse styles with Pacific Northwest ingredients, plus some hazy East Coast style IPAs.
Hmm. I haven't had any of their hazies, but I've had a lot of their sours and have yet to be disappointed.
I've had probably four or five of their sours, and I think I liked every one of them.
They're really good.
Yeah.
What is Fodor? aged. Is that, am I pronouncing that right?
Fooder aged. Fooder foder. You can, there's epic battles on how to actually say it. Basically, it's a huge upright barrel. So when you go into a brewery, you see that big, like, wooden vat.
Yeah.
That's a foder.
Oh, now, what is it when it's when it's like stone? Can that still be a
foder? Or no, that's kind of something different. There's different things. So,
or like Frame's egg.
That's a concrete egg.
Okay.
Is basically, that's the fancy name for that.
All right. Fair enough.
And those generally, those haven't really, so those are used a lot in winemaking. And in the recent past, I want to say Hair of the Dog was one of the first breweries to purchase one. So they could start doing their stuff from the stone.
Shit.
Can't
stump the beer gremlin, man.
No, no, absolutely not.
But I think a few other breweries have started to pick up the whole grab a concrete egg because it just imparts a whole different flavor profile.
Okay. As I'm sure the fooder does as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. And the nice thing about a fooder is usually, you know, you get that wood-aged character, but not necessarily the same character you would get as if you chucked it into an old, like, whiskey barrel or something. So it's kind of a different level.
And I imagine every time you use it, you're imparting a little bit of each batch into that wood, and that's going to come out in the next batch.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you're sanitizing things like that, but you're
sure, but yeah.
You're developing. It builds.
It's going to do something.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. So Urban Family doesn't really have like a standard lineup or like their flagship beer lineup. Like everything they do, they just do it now and there it is. And then they come back to it when they want to, kind of thing. So you can find, you know, so many of their beers out and around. You just kind of have to wait till they come around to doing it again, sort of thing. Nothing on any kind of planned rotation or anything like that, which is kind of cool because you can always find something brand new from these guys.
Yeah. And the thing is with beers like this, you can't always have a planned perfect release date.
I guess that's true.
Because some batches take longer to develop.
Yeah.
And if you're brewing these kinds of sours right, you let the beer take the amount of time it needs to take to get where you need it to be.
Fair enough.
So it can't always be, this particular one only takes 2 months and da-da-da.
Totally.
Yeah, maybe it did this time, but it might take a little longer for that flavor to balance out because you have so many factors, especially when you're playing with fruit.
Yeah.
Because what if, you know, this batch of nectarines is riper than this batch?
That and then any kind of bacteria. It's kind of going to do its own thing, I suppose. One thing I like about Urban Family is that they have some of the coolest beer names ever. So I wrote down some of my favorites here.
We were cracking up over these earlier.
Such as the Snakeskin Jacket or the Buffalo Stance or the Burner Phone. Sun's Out, Buns Out. Was a favorite, I think.
That's one we'll never see you experience.
No, absolutely not. Sun's out, stayed inside. That would be my beer. I liked Spelt It, Dealt It, for a beer with spelt in it. And I think my favorite one that I read on there was So West, It's East.
Nice.
When everything now has one of those two words attached to just about every IPA now to try to clarify which one it is. I like that they went and muddled it up so that you're not quite sure again. But some of their beers also are just named so that you desperately want to drink them because they sound so good. Like Juicenado, Guavasickle.
Damn.
Peacherillo.
I just got a case of that and I'm so excited.
You got Peacherillo?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. All right. I'll have to come get hooked up with that. And then Fruit Snacks, which I thought Juan would appreciate as a beer name.
Oh, yes. I do.
Juan likes his fruit snacks.
Yes.
Oh, every day in his lunch.
Yep.
Jesus
Christ. What's wrong with that? They're super yummy.
I'll never forget when the grocery store clerk asked me how old my kid was.
I remember that story. So good.
I'm only 3.5 years old.
Oh, Jesus. Otherwise known as this many. So, yeah, I definitely want to find out more about this particular brewery. I mean, I've enjoyed what I've had from them so far. I went back through my ratings, and I mean, I averaged like a 4.25 on their stuff for everything I've had.
They do some great stuff.
And they do other styles. They're not just wild and farmhouse and things like that. They do IPAs. They do porters. They do stouts.
Yeah.
Everything just has kind of a fun little unique twist to it that kind of sets it apart, makes it all their own.
Yeah, but everything's like very small batch. And
much like this movie. Yes, exactly. So, yeah, so speaking about this movie, was this a first watch for what, anybody here?
Which movie is
Identity?
I think it was for me.
No, well,
I don't
dude,
think I ever.
We saw it in the theater.
Yeah, we saw it way back. I just wasn't sure back if Grace had seen it.
I don't remember. It seemed oddly familiar. It's kind of like the Pontypool thing. Maybe.
Okay, look at it. There it is on my shelf.
The ending surprise you, though.
Yeah, because if I've seen it, good. It
then
was...
That's a payoff, then.
Way back.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I've probably seen it over the years. Let's say maybe 7-8 times.
Yeah.
Over the years. Every now and then you're like, oh, I liked this. This is kind of a mind trip. I'm going to watch this again. And I got to say, even this time, the most recent time of watching it, I was just super riveted. Like, yeah, sure, I kind of know where things are going, and I know what the grand end thing is. But you watch it because of that. You watch it to see how they got you there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's still just as awesome on so many repeated viewings, and I think that speaks volumes, too.
I like how the stories of the characters at the beginning of the movie, too, kind of they'll start off, something happens, how they end up at the place they're going, but then it'll go back to the next character and how they caused what that happened, you know, to the previous ones to happen, and it kind of just goes kind of in reverse a little bit until they get to the spot and then it kind of takes off.
Super good.
But I like how it revisits.
Yeah. You definitely know, like, why everyone is in this place and how they got there. And so you're fully on board once they are there, which is super cool. Directed by James Mangold, who did some movies I really like. He directed Copland.
That was a good movie.
He directed 310 to Yuma, the remake, the new one, of course. He directed Logan, which I love.
Oh, yeah.
And he directed Walk the Line, which is a really cool movie. So he's also kind of like all over the board. You know, he's got some really kind of biographical stuff and some superhero stuff and some westerns and some cop dramas and then a super kind of mind trip, you know, thriller. So definitely pretty cool. Now, here's a mind blower. And I'm thinking if anyone else at the table had looked this up, they would have already shouted this right out. Written by Michael Cooney, who was the fucking director of Jack Frost and Jack Frost 2.
Oh, no! God! We cannot get away from that stupid movie.
Went into German television movies and like disappeared from our country after having directed Jack Frost and Jack Frost 2, well, which, by the way, I love.
It? I love Jack Frost.
Because they're some of the worst movies ever. And then he came back, writes Identity, one of my favorite movies, and then disappears off back to Germany and starts doing like made-for-TV crap again. So I don't know what is with this dude.
The biggest tease in the world.
But I think that was like the funniest little piece of linkage I pulled out of all of this.
Wow.
Is that it was written by the director of Jack Frost.
And Jack Frost 2.
And Jack Frost 2.
It was so
Because who else was going to direct a sequel to Jack Frost?
Exactly.
Other than the guy that already did. Oh. Yeah.
I think it's interesting because the movie apparently also has a Bollywood version of it.
Really?
Out there. Yeah.
No way.
Done in 2005. They actually follows a storyline of Identity.
Huh. Just with more dance routines.
Just like with dancing the mic.
That'd be kind of fun.
Explosions of colored powder.
Yeah.
I love my Bollywood movies.
Oh my goodness, that would be so great.
Yeah, so if you can, I guess, interpret or translate my butchering of it. It's called Kamosh Kafkirat.
Common spelling?
Spencer says what?
Please,
I wonder. I wonder what that actually means. Like, I wonder what it translates into. I wonder if it's like
no idea.
If
man.
It gives away the movie, maybe it translates into duality.
Maybe.
Oh, it could.
That's right. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Lee's pronunciation probably protected us from any
giveaways. That, or he just offended.
Yeah,
a
I just started
of
one international incident.
You just called somebody something.
Why aren't we on iTunes anymore? What happened?
No, he probably nailed it right on.
Yeah, probably.
He can't say Lagunitas, but he can say whatever that was.
Fuck. That's probably true.
Lance Hendrickson. How was he saying?
Hendrickson.
Yeah.
Well, what about the cast?
Those good times.
I mean, Decorative Autumn Squash.
For this because, film,
yes,
right?
We have Ray Liotta, the Decorative Autumn Squash, yes. but we also have the Cuse himself, John Cusack.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And then what's her face? What is that girl's name?
There's a whole pile of
She was
folks
in a whole bunch of movies in like the 90s and early 2000s. And
probably Clea DuVall, who has resting bitch face this whole movie.
Yeah, Clea DuVall
Amanda,
is in
the hooker.
Stuff. Yeah, Amanda Pete. That's Amanda,
Amanda Pete. Okay.
Where the hell did she go?
So
she just kind of fell off the face of the earth.
The only thing I really knew her from was Saving Silverman.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And The Whole Nine Yards. And I'm sure she did a lot of other stuff.
She did a bunch of other stuff right around that time. Like 90s, early 2000s.
It also has... What I like is, what's, Hawks or whatever, what's his name? Something.
Yeah, John Hawks.
John Hawks from, Deadwood.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite TV
shows. Deadwood. He was on Lost and for a little while. Yeah. And one, a really, really good movie, Winter's Bone.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
Yes.
Even though it has Jennifer Lawrence, who I hate.
Yeah.
Well, and also Rebecca De Mornay.
Rebecca De Mornay, yeah. Yep. She had her stint for a while, especially.
She was in a lot more things than I knew about. When I think her, I think Three Musketeers. That was like,
and The Rocks of Cradle, I think.
And The Rocks of Cradle, yep.
Freaking
Wedding Crashers. And she was on, she's on the Jessica Jones Netflix series.
Oh, shit.
The weird shit.
I love the fact that Dr. Octopus was on this, too.
The Scrubs guy.
Oh, he is.
Yes.
Yeah.
His stepdad was Molina. On the Scrubs, a TV show.
What? Really?
The
John
shifty,
C.
Like...
McGinley. Or...
Yeah. See, and I knew you guys would know him from Scrubs. I never watched.
He was also on The Animal with
Scrubs. But he was in Point Break.
Rob Schneider. Oh, yes. Point Break.
He was in Seven.
Yes, he was.
He was in The Belko Experiment, which is a recent
horror,
which if you guys haven't seen that one, it's actually pretty good. And he's in The Rock.
Yes, he is in The Rock.
I don't remember him in The Rock.
Nicolas Cage.
I know what The Rock is.
The Rock is the greatest wrestler / adventure action hero ever.
Mm. Well, of that combo,
if you have to check all those boxes,
If you can make Jumanji make money, I guess you got.
But Amanda Peet, she's the one I remember being in like everything in the '90s because
she really was,
all those, like,
and then she just
horrors.
Fell off. And then when
and
I was
she was in like
so
Ghost
like,
of Mars, The Faculty. She was in the Heroes series, but also Zodiac. She was in the movie Zodiac, which I love.
She was in a bunch of shit. And then when I was watching this, I was thinking about that is, when was the last time you saw her in a movie?
Well,
where the hell did she go? She totally fell off the face
Ray
of the
Liotta.
Earth.
Well, you want to talk
Goodfellas,
about...
Goodfellas, come on now.
Yeah.
One of the greatest movies ever made.
We'd be remiss, though, if we didn't mention
Hannibal,
Jake Busey.
Yes.
Jake Busey,
He's a fucking lock of hair and teeth. That's all that guy is, man.
He's also in The Frighteners.
Yeah, he's good.
Starship Troopers.
Yeah, he's been in some garbage.
And Enemy of the State.
What? What garbage? You did not just
close the Frighteners.
And who's his father, by the way?
Okay.
Ginger Dead Man, I believe.
Ginger Dead Man, yes. Crazy ass damn Gary Busey.
I always mix up Jake Busey
and
Christopher Titus. I don't know why, but there's something about they were both kind of the same age, both white guys, both with like buzz cut, you know, flat tops at just the time when I didn't care about either one of them. So I have a hardest time keeping them separate.
That's fair.
But yeah, anyways.
Well, let's get on with the John Cusack.
Ray Liotta, also Muppets from Space.
Oh.
That's
fair.
Forget.
He played the security guard at the gate
forget.
Of the studios.
Hey,
so
that's something
he's in that. He's been in shit recently, though. He was in that. What was that show with
Shades
J-Lo.
Of Blue? He's great on Shades of Blue.
Yeah,
which is awesome.
I love it when they get like, you know, top actors to all come together and do. Mm-hmm.
Although
you know, a big,
I don't know who this
thing.
Well,
John Cusack guy is though. I mean, I've never heard of him.
He might amount to something.
He's like Clint Howard kind of. I mean. Kind of
you know who
he, lives off
hey,
of somebody's...
Speaking of
oh, I remember what he is. He's that little kid in Stand By Me. That's who he is.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
He's the older brother football player
who is,
that dies
wait,
in Stand By Me.
It's
John Cusack.
He's misleading all
I don't really... No, he actually is.
What?
John Cusack's in Stand By Me. No, he's the older brother that like dies and then the family's all in turmoil and the kid's sad and that's one of the reasons they go on the adventure.
Uh-huh.
You're shitting me.
No.
I don't watch Stand By Me.
I don't know what he's done since then, but
no, you're totally fucking with us.
No, that's absolutely correct. He is there. Yeah. I just wanted to.
He's Lane Meyer. Come on
the
now.
One that like most people probably don't.
Lane
remember.
Meyer.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't know that I ever thought about that.
No,
but it's been a
no,
real long
say
time.
Say anything.
Since I watched...
Better Off Dead. Gross Point Blank. Yeah. The Raven. Hot Tub Time Machine.
Candles.
High Fidelity. 16 Candles. Serendipity.
Yeah.
The guy's been around.
Yeah, all the things.
Been
he's been around for as long as I've been watching movies. He's been making cool ones. So
yeah.
He made movies back when it was cool to stand outside a girl's bedroom window that you liked
with a boombox.
With a boombox, and it wasn't considered stalking.
No one called anybody.
Still considered stalking when you do it, Lee.
No, back then. Back then. It was still called romance.
Still back then.
No.
That applies to Lee and Lee only. You can do that if you're John Cusack.
Way to kill the mood.
Lee's out there going, I thought you high school girls liked this.
He's out there in his trench coat in the rain, like,
do you know how hard it was for me to find a boombox in today's day and age?
That's right.
Jeez. Oh, man. You just hold up a turntable instead. Back in my day, we had a photograph.
Yeah.
Here we go. Shit. So, even the people we haven't mentioned, and I don't really know their names or their back catalogs, but even the people like that were meeting with the governor, you know, the psychiatrist, the defense attorney, all those people are known name actors who've been around.
The psychiatrist has been in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I didn't take notes that extensive.
What was his name?
Frederick Coffin was one of the guys that, and you'd recognize the name. He apparently passed away shortly right after this movie.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in like a lot of 80s stuff, like early 90s, late 80s stuff as kind of like always like the police detective or the captain
that
or something.
Guy, it's like so many movies, you have that guy, that actor that you know the face, don't necessarily remember the name or the anything.
Well, and that probably leads us to Mr. Pruitt Taylor Vince, who I have always known because he's the big guy with the lazy eye.
Yeah, the little twitchy eyes.
I should say the white big guy because he's not Forrest Whitaker.
No.
He's the white big guy with the lazy eye.
Well, that's Whitaker eye, dude. You just missed your Whitaker eye. I mean, come on now. That's a whole different eye, dude.
Forrest Whitaker eye?
Whit-eye, dude.
But,
Jesus Christ.
Pruitt Taylor Vince, he's been in The Cell.
Oh, that's a good movie.
Constantine, Natural Born Killers. Ooh. He's in the Stranger Things TV show. He was on Deadwood. He's in X-Files.
1902 there?
He was on The Mentalist.
Or is 1904 down?
This guy.
I saw that as one of his listings, but I don't actually.
Great movie. It is so worth seeing.
Fredo.
Oh, that Fred.
Guy. He's been
Fred
in a ton
Mello
of
de
stuff.
Castro. Yeah. Yeah.
I recognized him from Chocolat.
Oh, known for his roles in Raiders of the Lost Ark, Boogie Nights, Chocolat, Frida, Spider-Man 2, The Da Vinci Code. Oh, Da Vinci Code. That's where I'm thinking of him from.
Yeah.
Because I just watched
But he's recently. Been, he's always that kind of like just supporting role in a bunch of stuff.
But that's kind of the way he's every never the single lead. Face in this is. You're like, I've Who? Seen you in something else.
Spider-Man 2. Alfred.
Oh, yeah. Mello I was mentioning DeCastro. That earlier. Well, Dr. Castro. Octopus from Spider-Man 2.
That's Alfred Molina.
Yeah.
Yeah. Changed his name. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, his American name is Alfred Molina, I guess.
Let's go by his American name. Come on now.
Sounds weird.
British-American actor, blah, blah, blah. But whatever. No, he's been in a ton of shit.
So, yeah.
As has everyone in
this
film.
He was in Chocolate.
Yeah.
Film.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and what we just named off is, I think, all but maybe two characters.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of established.
There was, like, some guy taking notes in the room and some police officer in a room at one point we haven't talked about. And other than that.
Well,
that's
Clea DuVall's husband or whatever like that. Yeah, I don't know who that guy is.
I don't know. I looked him up. He's been in some crap.
Yeah.
He's done some things.
I think he was in
it was just
Jack
crap.
Frost. I don't know.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, the unsung character in this film, and I hate to even say it like that because it's going to sound all stupid like I'm writing for a newspaper blog or whatever, is the composer, Alan Silvestri. The music in this.
You always bring the music to the table, and that's cool.
I don't think
he's very focused on the music.
But he's done a lot of stuff, too.
Yeah, Silvestri. I mean, Predator 2. Yep. So think about that. I mean, everybody knows Predator. You know, you hear that, you know where that came from. And it set the mood so well. Judgment Night.
Oh,
and then how about The Avengers? He does the music for The Avengers, which is so famous and popular now that... You know, I just went and saw, of course, the new one, Infinity War.
You mean the British with Emma Peel? And,
Also great, though, but no. Not our remake movie, but the original show. The Avengers. I just went and saw Infinity War, and it's so funny because you're waiting for the credits, of course.
I got to plug my ears.
No, I'm not going to give away anything.
Okay.
In the credits, it says songs, you know, and it has the songs that play. And it had one actual song.
Yep.
And then the other credit on there was... Black Panther theme.
Yeah.
That's it. That, and the whole film is it. So the entire rest of that movie is 100% Mr. Alan Silvestri. Just the score that he wrote for the Avengers movie years and years ago that they just, it's enough to get you through, you know, film after film after film.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's so good. In this movie, he uses the score and different different themes mm-hmm. of music for moments that tell you you should be paying attention right now. Like there's a reveal theme.
Yeah.
And then there's another one that says, right now we're just building tension.
Yeah.
And he plays the tension building thing. And then there's another one that says, we're about to like show you something for a character that you don't know.
Yeah.
And that has a little theme. That would be cool. But he uses it with misdirection.
Mm. Yes. So much so.
You'll hear the music where you go, oh, this is the one where I'm supposed to be paying close attention.
And then nothing happens.
But or what happens isn't actually what happened, or it's not important, or whatever. So it's the first time I can recall it being very obvious to me watching a movie that my ears are like tricking my brain into going down paths that like my brain might not have gone down. And that I think is really super cool. And it just sounds awesome. It's a really good score.
Well, all of this came together to bring us a movie that, I mean, we haven't really talked about like what the ideal of the movie is.
Not at all. Yeah.
It's not a direct adaptation by any means, but it is a sort of essentially a And Then There Were None kind of thriller slasher, yeah. Agatha mm-hmm. Christie's And Then There Were None, you know, 10 Little Indians.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, basically, and I think House on the Haunted Hill did the same thing and
yeah,
stuff like that.
They actually reference And Then There Were None in this movie.
Yeah.
One of them says, you know, the events that are going on reminds me of that movie where everyone goes to the island and they all start dying one by one.
Yeah. At that point, I would have pieced my shit out to
yeah.
the farthest. Yeah.
Exactly. Actually, that Agatha Christie book, which in America and English-speaking nations is called And Then There Were None. And elsewhere in the world, it's an extremely offensive title. It was based on a song which we, probably also still offensive in today's climate, we know as 10 Little Indians.
Yeah.
Yes.
When it first came out, it was not Indians. It was 10 Little Something Else's.
I did not know that.
It was 10 Little N-Word.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the original name of the book and the original name of the song.
Terrible.
So then they changed that because in England at that time, 1940s, that was not culturally offensive enough. It didn't have like a racially charged connotation like it did here because, you know, they didn't just go through that entire huge period of slavery. So they changed it for English-speaking countries to be And Then There Were None, and it is one of the best-selling books of all time. So they pulled from a good source for inspiration, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, they sure did, because, man, there's nothing – I really like it when they take very few sets or very few locations and they just let you grow in that area and discover it and develop that, you know, that small area. And that's what they do here. They just simply say, hey – these 10 people, you know, through strange circumstances, find themselves stuck at a hotel, pouring down rain. Oddly enough, the road is flooded and washed out in both directions, which leads to the chicken and the egg. How did they get on the road in the first place if they're both? Right?
Yeah. Well, and that's what we got going on here. So for the basic kickoff of this film, you've got a family driving the first thing we meet actually is a convicted murderer named Malcolm, and he is looking at facing the death penalty in the morning. And his psychiatrist and a defense attorney are trying to get him a stay of execution, saying that he is criminally insane, should not be held accountable for the crimes he's committed, and that they can prove this via a journal that they have of his, which was like they messed up entering into evidence, or it was squashed by the
whatever. And they sort of implied that it was
kind of overlooked on purpose. We're not interested. And also through an unusual treatment technique that they've been doing for him at his mental health care during in the prison. So that's the first guy we meet, and so he's meeting in front of, I think, the governor,
who's he's pissed off, and he seems like a real, you know, gun-toting Texan kind of like swift justice kind
of guy. And he's been brought out on this super rainy night, and, you know, he was like, I already gave my ruling on this. You know what I think about this. This guy killed those people. He's going to die in the morning. Well, elsewhere on that same evening, we meet a family driving home, and they like, what is it, their tire?
They got a flat tire.
Get a flat tire.
Mm-hmm.
And dad's not outside real the useless. Car.
Not real useful.
Yeah, not very. He's a very quirky kind of dorky.
Hot mess.
Yeah. He's trying to change the tire. Mom is outside also, just kind of watching over him, keeping him company. And communicating with the kid in the car. Which is how we meet our limo driver.
Which is, this is the cool part of the beginning of the film that Juan was talking about, is they do this reverse chronology sort of structure where you see the husband rush in with the mom, and then they flash back to them driving in the car, and then they flash back to the tire that got popped and the guy that hit her, and then why the tire got popped, which was a high heel.
Yeah, this is kind of all over the
shoe. And they introduce almost all of the characters in this way and then cut you loose.
Yeah.
Which my impression was that, oh, okay, they're showing us kind of the backstory of all of the victims from the guy that's about to get executed at the very beginning.
It is kind of set up that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Cusack is our limo driver. He's driving a washed up starlet to LA. We meet a prostitute who is fleeing Vegas. She is just tied up and robbed.
Yeah, some guy.
A guy.
Yeah.
And she's taken off out of Vegas, and her luggage opens and a bunch of her clothes and some shoes fly out onto the freeway. She ends up getting to the end of the road where it is flooded out. And as she backs up to go back the other direction, she takes out the telephone pole, cutting off landlines. We meet a cop who's doing a prison transport. He's transporting a prisoner from one location to another, and he's stuck out on this road. And we meet a young couple of newlyweds who we're not really sure what their damage is.
Yeah, they reveal it a little bit later, but
they're just, I mean, it's
they're having a shit day.
Right up front that they're damaged in some
way. They did
way.
A like rushed wedding, and then at one point she yells at him and tells him that she's not pregnant. So it seemed like she pressured him into marrying her because she was pregnant.
Under false
they're damaged.
Yeah. And then lied to him about
damaged
it.
Shit.
He's got nothing but eyes for the hooker once they all meet together and stuff. So yeah, they've got problems. And then we also are introduced to the motel clerk at this motel out in the middle of nowhere, who also is just a little rough around the edges. Kind of isn't as amicable as you would imagine a front man for an establishment should be, that sort of thing. But the real urgency here on this night of just terrible storm and huge lightning and torrential rains is the limo driver strikes and injures the mom.
Of the folks
family.
That had the flat tire.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because she got out of the car.
And they rush to the motel just about in the same time that everyone else is starting to show up.
Which should, by my count, equal 10 people.
I believe so.
Yes.
Yeah. So they all show up at this motel, and that's kind of our cast of characters. The washed-up actress is a total biatch.
Oh, yeah.
She's not
really
nice at all. She doesn't even care that this lady, like, almost lost her life and might.
Exactly.
She doesn't want to give up her phone. She doesn't want to give up her ride, you know.
She's like, don't accept fault for this, all this other
exactly.
stuff. You know,
but
just like,
John
don't
Cusack
help
is a good person and handles shit.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
He's like, no, we're going to help this lady.
And the motel, you know, owner, I guess, flat up just tells the prostitute.
We find out right out that
she's trash.
He don't like
me. Don't let rooms by the hour.
Yeah. She goes, you got to look me in the eyes when you're talking to me. He goes, I don't look at trash. I mean, so there, that was a little interesting because you're like, man, that's a little over the top. Like every one of these people is just like a little bit over the top. They're like a very strong caricature of, you know, whatever they, you know, no one has a lot of variance. They're very pinpointable as like what they
like
are.
Like the stepdad of the little kid and the husband of the woman who got hit is super neurotic.
Yeah.
Very and neurotic. Like when he gets a flat tire, he starts saying out loud slowly like the steps.
Yeah,
he's like,
tire.
Hold
he's
on
like,
to
apply
wheel,
slightly,
apply
pump
brake slightly.
turn into this kid, turn into
like,
this kid.
Yeah. Really weird things. And he was doing the same thing when he was changing the tire. And he's very, like, by the book and very just weird and anal. And
he's like, absolutely the, like, you know, let me push up my glasses with my
finger. So,
like,
there's very distinct personalities that represent each person for sure.
Very much.
Yeah,
so.
It's funny too because each one of those sort of have like little backstories too. There are things that you don't discover, and I honestly didn't quite realize it until we were talking, because John Cusack's character is an ex-cop.
Yeah, we find out eventually that he used to be a cop in L.A.
Ray Liotta's character has a little something that's revealed later. Yeah,
comes up.
So everybody has like this
front. It turns out that the prostitute fleeing Vegas is actually, she just stole all this guy's money.
Yeah, she just robbed a major score.
Because she's going to Florida to purchase an orange grove.
Yep.
So she can like retire into like running
And even the hotel clerk has a backstory that
he also does. Yeah, and we'll get into these a little bit more as we go. We're going to kind of baby step this, I think, for a minute for anybody who hasn't seen this film. But so you've got these 10. Very unique, very different, and at times very clashy, non-compatible personalities. Stuck in a hotel, they can't leave because the road's washed out in both directions. The Starlet has the only cell phone, and it's not reaching anybody. And I was thinking about that. I was like, you know, it's whenever I see cell phone outage used in a movie, I always think how crappy it is that cell phones came along four movies. Because that was just a whole thing they have to be able to explain away why people can't contact the outside world, you know, and get help immediately.
Well, I get the feeling this
But then
is,
I was like, this is 2003. Like,
Well,
look where they're at though in this movie, though. They're not in a major city. They're off on a road somewhere. The hotel
is middle of nowhere, Nevada.
And the darndest rain you're going to see. I mean, it's just coming down.
And we see her knock out the landline.
But
so
I also get the impression that it doesn't take place necessarily in 2003. It seems a little older.
It seems slightly more dated just because the only person that has probably 90s because the only person that has a phone is the wealthy actress
and
the woman who can afford to hire a limo driver
flip open
it
ain't no brick phone
so it would have been when you know AT&T
so like phones are cell phones are definitely a thing and but they're not in every single person's pocket.
That would make sense given what we know comes to be the fruition of this film. It would make total sense that these events would be maybe 10, 15 years.
Fruition of the events? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know what we're saying. So what really kickstarts things, though, and keeps it from just being 10 people staying the night in a hotel, is the murderer who is being transported, the convict, in the back of Ray Liotta's prison transport car.
Which is Jake Busey.
Jake Busey. Mm-hmm. He gets himself chained to a toilet just so they can keep track of him while they're all there. And then he gets himself out of being chained to a toilet, and he's gone. So that's kind of our first uh-oh, is that this guy has run off into the night, literally. And, you know, they can't all really go running off to find him. So they kind of hunker down instead.
And it really – so it already – the movie already has got you interested there. The way they introduce the characters, the way they play off of each other, you're like, you know, you're connected. And then at that point that you're just talking about, that's when it just continues to take off. There is never a dull moment after that.
No, I don't think
so.
It just
really keeps me going to the point where all of a sudden they start doing the wrap up and the reveal. And I'm like, what? Holy shit. That much time went by already?
Yeah.
The movie's over?
Yep. I also like that. And I can't remember how I wrote it down in here, but I took it as some notes where I said the film doesn't rely on like a one simple like, aha, I see kind of a reveal.
No.
It, A, has a number of reveals, but it doesn't save them all for the end. You find stuff out at about the 2/3 mark going right into like the third act that you're like, oh. And it changes the whole way you're thinking about this film.
Yeah.
And then you still have like 2 or 3 surprises to come.
I was going to say, because then once you figure out, oh, I saw that coming, then it's, I understand. Now this is what happens. The end just is
they
like,
turn
nope.
It.
That is not how it is.
It even finds a way at the end of this thing to recap it for you, to take you on a trip back and hold your hand through all the little things and go, see? And you go, I didn't, but okay, cool.
Is this when was old Master of Twists himself? When did he do Sixth Sense? Old
Mr. Shyamalan?
Night Shyamalan, yeah.
Shyamalan-ing
when did he do?
Sixth Sense was like 98, 99, wasn't it?
Really?
Yeah, so. It was late 90s, I think.
I mean, Grace will Google find that for us.
So I was going to say. Is it think, late 90s or very early 2000s? I want
to
say it's
prior to this.
Okay.
And I guess that's kind of what I mean, is that we look at him as like, oh, you're a great master.
Sixth Sense was 99.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So wow. That's the way twists were handled back then. Mm-hmm. You just popped it on people right at the end, and then they walked out of the theater going, whoa.
Yeah.
This gets you a good 20 minutes, 25 minutes still to the end of the movie. You're already going, whoa.
Wait a minute. What? Just from the reveals of everybody having duality? Oh, I did not plan that. Yes, that is very nice. Right there.
Nice. I like it.
Hence the mere choice.
You know, each character having their own little
absolutely
front and then backstory that was a complete flip of personalities.
Yeah. Damn. So we're on board already because we are very interested in these characters. We're very interested in what's going to happen with, you know, Jake Busey and where he's gotten off to. And that's just about the time our first corpse shows up.
Yeah.
And this is why I would say earlier that this is kind of – this film feels very slashery to me. And I'll tell you why. A slasher, in my mind, it's in a house with a group of people being stalked by a guy. Or it's in a campground. Or something, but it's an enclosed, confined spot. You can't have a slasher that runs all over town, really, and have the same feeling. I mean, I can think of some examples, but usually
Jason Takes Manhattan, for instance.
Jesus.
Exactly what I was thinking.
You took Manhattan.
But fundamental slasher, you know, you want people ticked off one by one. And you want it to be in kind of a variety of ways. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, and that's what supports the slasher theory here is that it's not like the original Agatha Christie's black and white film where, okay, sure, somebody's poisoned and then somebody's stabbed and then somebody's shot. And, you know, that's pretty mundane anymore. I mean, this first kill, they end up finding her severed head in a dryer.
Yep.
Thumping that's around in there. Slasher, you know.
Yep.
All over it.
So that's the we might as well throw this one out there. That's the bitchy actress. She's the first to go.
Yeah,
that was very satisfying.
Yeah,
very satisfying.
Yeah, nobody was sad about that.
So I thought that was great because now they've murderized someone and they're all in terror. But you're secretly going like, all right. There's a couple other of these characters that I wouldn't mind maybe seeing getting a little something, and that goes a long way. So now we know, or they know at least, or they think they know. Where
somebody's,
Jake Busey's character has gotten off to
is
he's just going to come into this motel now and start picking them off one by one.
And it's about this time when we find out that John Cusack's character is an ex-cop, I think, because he tells
the actual cop things he's supposed to be doing.
Because he starts investigating it by like touching things with like, you know, a piece of plastic instead of putting his fingerprints on them. He starts taking pictures. He goes into the little, you know, lobby and takes an Insta camera.
Which are things that Ray Liotta is not doing.
Which dates this film right there, that there was one of those like 24
shot. Which he's doing right now.
Stuff on the screen. He's taking pictures. And, you know, they're like, what are you taking pictures for? And he's like, preserving the evidence, you know? Someone's going to have to investigate these crimes. And that's when they realize, he's a cop.
Or was a cop.
Was a cop.
Yeah.
So, we've got our boogeyman. We've got our Jake Busey. Where is he? You know, who's he going to get next? We know he's got a finite amount of places to go because this is in the middle of the desert. You know, if he wants to keep killing or escape, he's got to either come back into this hotel and, like, steal a car or kill everybody.
Right.
So, we're kind of chugging along on board with this.
And while they're looking for him, because of after the realization of the first kill, the headless corpse... They pretty much say, hey, okay, everybody stay in the room. Everybody stay together. Don't leave. And then the two cops go out and investigate.
Yep.
But of course, the two newlyweds, you know, they start flipping their shit and they have to separate from the group. Yep. And you're like, okay, I know who's next. Right?
Absolutely. And sure enough.
Sure enough, they are.
One of them is.
The hubby goes down. And that's when everybody freaks out because they're like, holy fuck, this convict. Maybe earlier. I can't remember now.
No, at this point, we still think he's come back because they say, you know, stay together. Don't be alone. Don't do this. Don't do that. They go off and do their own thing. One of them winds up dead. And
then they're like, holy shit, the convict's out murdering us now.
Exactly. And this movie does really, really good at that in pulling the characters apart, no matter how desperately they might even want to be staying together.
I think that was the most boring kill, too, by the way, the newlywed husband.
Yeah. Because as this thing goes, we've got a really cool kill with a baseball bat. Mm-hmm. I think that's about far
enough. Which right now is right there on TV.
Which is super cool. We've got stabbings. We've got people being smashed by vehicles. Yep. We've got explosions, people being blown the hell up. Mm-hmm. We've got people getting shot.
Yep.
We've got a beheading. We've got some suffocation action.
Oh, this sounds like a Joe Bob Briggs. It does, right?
Yeah. We've got vehicle food. We've got baseball bat food. Yeah. Give Joe Bob his shot.
Oh, yeah. And all the bodies have a signature on it. They have the keys on them, the room key.
They find their room keys. And they were all given rooms, number 1 to 10, of course, as they came in.
And I think it's when they go back to the head, they find key number 10, key 10, right?
Yeah. And they start counting backwards as they find people.
And interestingly, they begin to perish in numerical order.
Yes.
Except even our second killing, one of the couple, is out of order. But that's because their room door thing flipped down.
Yeah, so and six changed from a 9 to a 6.
9 to a 6 or 6 to a 9 or whatever. 6 to a 9
because it was going 10 to 9.
It went 6 to a 9.
The classic only one nail's holding this letter up.
Exactly. And so when they die as number 9, you know, we're going, oh, they got that wrong. But again, we're thinking, well, Jake Busey's just coming in and picking the number and just ticking them off in order. And then they're all found with that room key there to tell us about this countdown that's happening. But then that's where things go really wild, and I think shortly after this is where we're going to have to throw up some spoiler cautions.
Yeah, because it's tough after this point.
After this is when Jake Busey
actually shows...
After they've re-apprehended him.
Yeah, they get him again. And while they have him, there's another murder.
Which is... Spoiler alert. Which is him, right?
Well...
It is...
There is another murder. They run in to blame him for it or to see if he's escaped, and he's dead. So it's actually before he dies. What is the other
murder?
It was...
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There was a lot of hand motions going on here, and some winks and some, I don't know, looks.
So very early on, our prime suspect, our murderer, is found dead.
Yes.
And people keep dying.
A fucking baseball bat right down his throat.
So now is when things start getting really odd.
And that's very slasher-ish.
Especially for us, the viewer, because we get to see, and this has already happened by this point, I just didn't want to throw it out there too early, we get to see Jake Busey try to escape on foot.
Yes.
And run straight off into the desert.
Straight out into the desert.
To just get away, only to wind up back at the motel.
Right. Now you're like, what fucking supernatural shit's happening?
Yeah, we're going down a whole other road of supernatural stuff. And then that's when...
they throw the supernatural thing at you, too, with the whole graveyard comment. Yeah. The burial ground.
It's the... Our young newlywed girl
was it called the
pamphlet. I don't remember what it was called.
Indian burial ground.
Basically, there was some sort of Indian burial ground on those lands before they built it. So she thought that maybe it was,
a curse and
bad juju and spirits and all of that.
And to be quite honest, the government moved the Indians to this place and there's no water.
That seems totally believable because you're like, well, he's trapped in this loop, can't leave this motel. People are dropping like flies. What the shit? So it's not unbelievable.
Yeah, and in that one deft move, we go from, okay, can they catch the murderer before he kills them all, to, wait, what the hell's happening? Is this dead Indians?
Yeah, I love it because it's like a ghost movie? It's like thriller, murdering thriller, to slasher, to supernatural?
Yeah, and then it's going to go some other places, too.
And it all makes sense. It makes a lot of sense as they do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And... when they find Jake Busey's character, the convict's character, that begins to pin blame on others that are there, and we start learning some of their secrets.
Yes.
So it's probably about this point where we might want to give a little wrap up and then say spoilers and then dive right back into this.
On a side note with that real quick, but yeah, I agree with you. That was very slasherish feeling to me too.
Oh, totally.
That kill with Busey.
Yeah.
They made a full-size dummy of Busey to do that in. Mm-hmm. And apparently the production guy or the producer wanted to keep the dummy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he actually took it and put it at his place of work in his office. And a cleaning person came across it one night and had a fucking big episode.
Yeah, if it was as is.
Yeah, that was freaky shit.
That's really hilarious. Wow.
So, yeah.
So, yeah.
That was the spoilers.
All going in this film, we've got a body count of 14 people. We've already been over some of how all that happens.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even that is respectable on a slasher level, you know, let alone a thriller. Yeah. I mean, even 7, we've only got, what, 7?
7?
I think, well, maybe.
14, you
8,
say.
I guess.
Yes.
14, you say.
There are 14.
But there's only 10 people there.
I know. It's
crazy. I can tell you where one of them are, because they showed it on the screen.
The atmosphere of this is so perfectly claustrophobic, where everyone feels compressed into these tiny motel rooms. Like, you just kind of feel like if you walk outside that motel room and it's, you know, horrible quilt and it's cheesy wallpaper and all that, if you walk outside of that, you're doomed. So it's very oppressive into that.
Why do they keep doing it then?
Which is something to do, though, when you consider this motel's in the middle of the damn desert. This is the most wide open expanse of places you can go. But through darkness, torrential rain, never-ending lightning and thunder, and supernatural dead Indians, it's a really claustrophobic film.
It's true. It's true. I don't understand, though, why, I mean, what, is 70s hotel wallpaper so horrible that you'd rather go out in the pitch of night with the torrential rain to risk being murdered?
Yeah, well,
which is what every single one of these dumb motherfuckers do.
And some of that, though, we learned through their backstory why they would. So I guess this is where we'll do it. So spoilers are coming. We're not going to give over the grand reveal, but we're going to give up quite a bit over the next little bit. So already, though, 100% has, I think, everybody's recommendation at this table.
Absolutely.
Great. If you're into any kind of mystery, thriller, spooky, scary, great supernatural movie, or not, this is going to probably have something for you with, like, one of the best ensemble casts.
Yeah. So it made a shit ton of money, too.
It did really well.
Yeah, I mean, the first week, shit, I don't know. I have it down here somewhere. Like, the first week was, like, $16 million.
Wow.
Good grief. Back in that day, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and this entire film's budget went into the actors, which because there's nothing else in it. It's a two-location you know, shoot, and the location itself is probably a rehash of... Actually, I think the entire thing was done on Sony's backlot, so they didn't even have to go anywhere.
No, well, yeah, $28 million budget, it made like $90 million.
Well, I'm glad they spent the money on the people, because the actors sell this, because this could easily go super cheesy, like Netflix special of the week, kind of like, oh yeah, it was a pretty good movie, but instead it's like phenomenal.
Well, now, hold on now. Because fucking Ice Cream Man had an ensemble cast of... Jan Michael Vincent's
was written by a porn director.
Yeah, and it was not helmed by Mr. Cusack.
The Cusack, the Cus makes
the Cus, dude. Yeah. Come on now,
the Cus.
It was helmed by Mr. Howard.
I was gonna say by Mr. Not.
No,
Ron.
Not that Mr. Howard.
The other one, Mr. I can buy the white boxes can't outside the window. Come on now, and not be a creepy perv. Come on now.
Yeah, everybody.
So go see this movie. Go find it. Rent it. You know, pay $3.99, whatever, streaming on Amazon.
Exactly.
We shall pause now so that they can push the pause button while spoilers
flow. So this is your chance.
Watch this movie.
If you want to get out of here without a significant portion of it being kind of revealed to you, bail out now. Come and listen to the rest of this.
Spoiled a little bit, but that's all right.
But I think, you know, if you spoil things that are in the first act, I mean,
it's okay.
I think you're safe.
Yeah, that's the hook.
Yeah.
That's the hook.
I think you're still safe.
I'm
reel you in now.
Another hook.
Because this is about where the second act kicks in. And we're gonna pretty much go through that a little bit. And then third act, I want to kind of leave alone.
Yeah.
Just because you want something.
Damn it. I still wanted to shout the ending just now.
Just right in the middle.
Just like, bah!
I'll fix it in post. All right. So go check this out. Come back and see us. And we're back.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't going to, like, press a button or anything.
That was fucking Hollywood magic right there. Jesus Christ.
Who knows how much time has gone past. For some of these people, that could have been weeks by the time they tracked this film down, ordered it from Amazon because they don't have Prime. Exactly. And they just got some free time to watch it. And they've seen it. And then they ran back to their, phone? Do we decide people listen to podcasts on phone?
Yeah.
Phones, and they're listening.
I still love that that's super weird for you.
I only listen to them in my car. I've never listened to a podcast that wasn't in my car. It's weird. I don't know. Anyways, welcome back. Thanks for rejoining us. What'd you think? Hope you liked
it. We're back in 2 and 2.
Sure you did. Oh, no. Oh, man. What is that guy's name?
Chuck Woolery, dude.
Thank you, Woolery. Chuck Woolery. I was like, Wolf something?
Chuck Woolery.
Didn't he do the wedding dating game or something?
It was Love Connection or whatever it was. Love
Connection, yeah.
Something, yeah.
Yeah.
There is a thing out there that didn't
come
to fruition until more of the multimedia age. But when they were doing that, you know, you have to – the game show where you have to ask questions and then your spouse has
Newlywed game.
Yeah. Newlywed. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Yep. And you guys have probably heard
Bob Eubanks.
Bob Eubanks. That's who I was thinking of. That's not – well, but anyway, they had said something like – where's the strangest place you've made
whoopee?
And the wife answers in the butt.
In the butt. Yeah. That's on YouTube. I highly recommend
it. That's like innocent late 70s, man.
Yeah. The best reaction was the husband, who's just equal parts like stunned, proud, and disappointed all at the same time. It's really hilarious. That's the strangest place you've made whoopee. She goes in the butt.
In the butt.
Yeah, look it up.
Wow.
From the mouths of newlyweds.
Yes.
So, all right. So, Jake Busey, our convict, and we find out that he is offed by the motel owner.
Yes.
And why he is offed is because Jake Busey was going to unveil his big secret.
Yes. And he has a big secret.
Yeah. So, turns out he literally has skeletons in the closet, so to speak.
Yeah.
So
yes.
He's got a body
in
kind of a large freezer unit
That
the motel uses. And that body is of the previous motel owner.
Yes.
I don't remember if he said he offed him or found him.
He did
him.
Not.
I think he found him dead. He found him dead. That's right.
Yeah. He was just down on his luck, had nothing.
Found
just cruising
him.
Down the road, went in there to get a motel with the last of his monies, and finds the owner dead and goes, well, at the very least, I'm going to stay here for free.
Yeah.
And while he's doing that and getting a key from behind the counter.
People's come.
Someone comes in. It's like, I need a room. And they pull out money. And he's like, okay, cool.
So this...
Yeah.
So the going thought is that now, since Busey was going to out him for this little secret, because he kept going, what's in that freezer? What's in that freezer you're trying to protect? What's in that freezer? And our motel guy's got a baseball bat going, you shut up, you shut up, you shut up. And the next time we see Busey, he's got a baseball bat literally shoved down his throat, which is awesome. By the way, unless, of course, your cleaning lady finds it in your office closet, apparently.
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out, because the way they reveal the end, I was thinking to myself, how the fuck could that have ever happened? Because I didn't quite believe – well, I did believe the hotel owner that when he proclaimed his innocence.
Yes.
I didn't think he did it.
Well, that's the thing. They drag him in there and go, look what you did. Uh-huh. Look what you did. And they find the body, and they go, now we even know why you did it.
Yep.
He still says, I didn't do it. I didn't kill the body in the freezer, and I did not kill Busey.
So he freaks out, fucking grabs his knife, and
he freaks out,
grabs
and runs.
The hooker, and tries to, threaten her.
He gets himself.
Yeah, they fight. He
tried to cut a hoe.
Yep. Tries to escape in his car.
Yep. And if you now start to think back over this movie you've just watched and the people that have died thus far, he was never around. He was always available.
Yep.
He could have done every single one of those murders. So we've got a new suspect to chase now.
Yes.
This motel owner who may or may not have killed the previous owner and all this kind of stuff. Uh-huh. So another great piece of misdirection, which before very long at all, is also wrapped up because we get him...
Mm-hmm.
Trying to escape, and through doing so...
In said truck, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Accidentally kills another one of our people.
Mm-hmm.
And another motel key is found.
Yeah, yes. Which is crazy because they're like, there's no fucking way that this could be planned because this was a complete random act.
Mm-hmm.
No one knew that the dad was going to jump out in front of the car.
Yeah, as this guy just happens to be trying to escape through that one spot, and I think he swerves to avoid the little boy, because the little boy has been around this whole time. He just doesn't say much.
Which I don't even think we've even mentioned there's a little boy, have we?
Just in the car. Yeah. But he gets traumatized by basically seeing his mom get...
Well, he's seeing everything going on right now. And they also mentioned
that the little boy doesn't really talk much since his actual dad left, because his actual dad was abusive.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I forgot about
that. So they already talk about how he's just kind of an introvert, awkward kid who doesn't really talk much. He just kind of hides and freaks out, and his mom just kind of...
Yeah, so I think he's around, though, at this point, and the guy tries to swerve to avoid hitting him.
Even the
and...
little kid has parfaits.
Right? Yeah.
Parfaits.
Well, and then this fucked up little kid sees his mom getting nailed by a car.
Yeah, and he's now seen a stabbed to death body.
Yeah.
And he's now seen his mom
kid's super duper
die,
fucked up.
Because his mom does wind up dying from the injuries she sustained.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he's... I don't remember if he gets to see the Busey body or not. I don't think he's there.
I don't think he sees that one, but
I think he did.
Maybe he did cruise by.
Might have cruised by there. I don't know.
He almost died too.
Yeah, he almost gets run over by the truck. And, and his dad or his stepdad saving him gets smushed by our escaping motel guy.
Right in front of him.
But on his corpse, the dad, the stepdad's corpse, we find a key. And like Juan said, that may, or like you were saying, that makes no sense because.
And the key's out of order, isn't it? Is this one that's out of order and they're like...
This was to fix the order that was messed up previously. Uh-huh.
Because the mom has a key on him and they're like, well, how the fuck is he going to know when the mom's going to die?
The mom just died from natural causes and all of a sudden she's got the key.
Natural-ish.
This guy dies from... Well, yeah. I guess it's not natural causes if like 5 hours ago you were smashed by a speeding vehicle.
Right? Yeah. Exactly.
I'm like, come on, lady. Just come to terms. And
come on.
And then this guy dies by accident. Yeah, so now we're right back from, wait a minute, the guy we now think is killing folks just killed another folk, but in so doing, took the blame off of himself and made this supernatural again.
Yeah.
Yep. And we're like, what? What is even?
Right.
Yeah. So at this point, you're really mind warped, but you're so in. Not a single bit of this is off-putting in the sense of like, oh, this is just isn't making any sense.
It's so west, it could be east.
So far west, it's east. That's right. Actually, that would have been a good pairing for this as well. Yes. With the can't get away, keep coming back. Roads are washed out.
I just want to pop this in here real quick. We were talking about all kinds of like weird things. We did the spoiler alert, whatever.
Yeah.
Even the makers of this film realized, because they actually filmed a handful of conclusions for this film to keep the actual ending and the reveal secret.
Nice.
They filmed a
not
number.
To like see which one they liked best, but just to hide. That's cool.
Yeah, purposefully to just create alternate endings that were to hide the actual ending.
That's really smart, because this movie is the kind that takes you back to those old showman days where, you know, they would have a Hitchcock or a Corman or a whoever, and there was somebody that had a film out that basically said, if you give away the ending of this movie, you'll have such and such curse and all this. And by buying a ticket to the movie, another person said, you buy a, I think this was Hitchcock actually, he said, by purchasing a ticket for this film, I think it might have been Psycho, he said, you are entering the following contract, and they had it on display like in...
Ooh.
In theater, Grace? Walk-ins, that said, you cannot spoil the ending of this.
You're the Hitchcock movie. Aficionado, right?
I don't know that I'd call myself an aficionado. I'm a fan.
Hmm. I'm just trying to put you on the spot to see if you can confirm his bullshit or not.
She is the beard.
I'm pretty sure that was him that said that. Yeah, he was like, you buy the ticket, you watch the movie, and now you're sworn to silence.
Hmm.
And I think he had a TV spot even or something like
it
that.
It totally sounds like something he would do, but that's not something that I've heard of. But that means nothing. It
worked well for Empire because nobody revealed that.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's kind of implied if your movie has like a good twist or a good surprise, people don't want to ruin it for other people. I mean, nowadays you have the internet and you have every asshole out there trying to ruin it for some people. Right. But
there's still a level of respect. I mean, I'm even surprised right now that 3 or 4 days after Infinity War that I haven't seen a saturation of spoilers.
Yeah, don't read the comments. Yeah. That's it. Whatever you're looking at, just don't read the comments.
Where were we?
Every character in this damn movie seems to be either straight up unlikable.
Oh, this smells great.
Untrustworthy. or at the very least, suspicious.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Are we, did have we reveal we Ray Liotta's we secret yet?
Ray Liotta. Okay. We haven't talked about the almost reveal for Cusack. Cusack gets called into question because it's like, yes. Well, hey, if you used to be a cop and you're running this investigation and you're telling everyone to stay in these rooms, yeah. But you're wandering all over unchecked,
exactly.
He gets called out.
Yeah.
At which point we find out his backstory and why he's not a cop anymore and all that, and it just makes us more endeared to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody can tarnish the sack. You just can't.
Maybe that's because yours is so polished.
Ah, yes. You know, freshly shorn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or wrinkly and saggy.
A freshly shorn sack.
Life's lessons, kids.
Yeah.
Go out there and make something out of yourselves.
I have a push-up
this
underwear.
This is why people subscribe right here. It's this kind of sack.
This is saggy.
Public service we're offering.
You women have your bras. I got my undies.
But then Ray Liotta, we kind of doubt Ray Liotta from the first time we see him.
I never once thought.
Because he's too angry, first off, which, you know, I don't know, maybe that's some people's view of cops and stuff, but it kind of doesn't work in this situation. He's just a little too angry and mad, and he carries a gun, but not like in a holster. He like sticks it down his pants.
Yeah, right.
So that's a little weird, you know, but at the same time, maybe he's just a D-bag, you know, maybe he's
well,
just
even
a jerk.
With the radio thing, John Cusack's like, do you want to take turns on the radio? He's like, no, I got it.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
So we're led to distrust him early on, and as we find out, for very good reason. And I mean, we told you spoilers were coming.
Here we come.
He's not a cop.
Nope.
He's actually a fellow convict,
which is interesting because when they
Jake Busey.
And they don't really hide it right up to the end and do a big reveal. They have a little thing where he's like changing his jacket, or he puts his jacket back
on.
Grace starts
to
like, I see blood in the hole.
My shirt's fucked up. I'm like,
fucking hole in the back
of
his shirt, bloody.
And you kind of think of it like a bullet hole. At least I did when I first saw it, because they hadn't given us the flashback yet. And then we find out that it was him and Jake Busey's character in the back of that prison transport. And he pulls a shank out of his sock.
But they went through the car seat into this guy's back.
The reveal of that just happened.
Oh, right shit. Sure did.
We're like in sync with this movie.
Yeah, he even unscrews off the back of the seat like a bolt
that
was holding the plexiglass on so that it gives him a hole to push the shiv through.
Just
really pretty cool.
Fist pumps it right into his back.
Has Ray Liotta ever played a good guy?
I don't think
that
so.
I can remember. He's always been a shiesty
really
character.
A good decorative autumn squash?
No, you can't. He's always a bad decorative autumn squash.
So as we're seeing actually right now on my TV here, he's dressing up in the suit and the clothes and all that kind of stuff. And the other guy's like, yeah, where's my gun? Where's my clothes? Because there are two officers in the front of this vehicle. And he goes, nope, and just closes the door.
Yeah.
I think
there's only one.
He's in the trunk right now. They just revealed.
Yeah, the hooker Paris discovers the body, and this is where shit goes way wrong now. Now you're all of a sudden like, holy fuck, it's not supernatural.
Yeah,
it's been Ray Liotta the whole time.
Who is killing everybody?
Yeah.
And is it more than one person killing people?
Well, and that's the other thing. Yeah, like,
you don't
any
for
one
sure
of these
know
people,
that there's one
killer. They're talking about it now, too. Like, what's our connection?
Yeah.
Like, they start putting these pieces together when one of them mentions that story. Like, this is just like when all the people go to the island and they all start dying.
Yeah.
And of course, that makes you think you've seen that in 100 Hollywood movies. And they think that. And they're like, so what would bring us together? So they start comparing notes.
I was always wondered what it would be like. So these guys are terrified, right? They're all terrified of somebody murdering them.
Yeah.
Pretty much. What if
every single one of these people were actually, like, their own serial killer? Like, they were serial killers.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, everybody that showed up there had their own...
Like, maybe there was a convention in Vegas.
And they something, all just... yeah. So, like, would they be afraid of each other? I mean, what would it be? What would that be like if a bunch of serial killers ended up in the same spot, or mass murderers, or...
Kind of like Comic-Con. Like...
Honest to God.
you put a bunch of introverts all in one room, and they freak out.
I was going to say, honestly, I think it would turn into a knitting circle. I think it would turn into a bunch of guys sitting around a table
they'd be like,
going,
so, like this one
so there was this one kid, I totally thought he was going to get away. I had to chase it.
Yeah.
I could see it being a trade secret.
It'd either be trade secrets, or it'd be a bunch of introverts not being able to talk to each other because they don't know how to handle it.
Really? You don't think it would be like through osmosis or through like bragging rights, I'm going to kill all of you so that, like Highlander.
There can be only one. I don't think so. I feel like serial killer mentality is they're all super fucked up. And well, it's usually in a, like, a weird way.
Yeah. They're
if it was a bunch of slashers.
Oh, yeah.
All together. Totally different ballgame. Done. That's sure. We're going to one up you in all five say
of okay, one of the guys sense. Is a serial killer that just kills, like, teenage high school age girls. And one of them is a teenage high school girl serial killer that only kills clowns. And one of them is a clown.
This is getting really
serial killer
derailed in detail.
Then
they would announced trigger each other.
$1 million movies.
And it'd be on.
But that's the thing is serial killers, it has to be a certain fetish.
It's like a battle royale of sorts.
Yeah, what are we going to call this film I've just come up with?
Yeah, we've got to make this happen. Copyright, we got copyright law 2018, May 1st. Set it first. Yeah, I don't know.
I think that counts. Everybody? I think that counts.
Yeah, I think that counts. That's
I'll make sure established. It goes in, just so we've got the tapes.
Well, you didn't think fucking Mark Zuckerberg came up with Facebook without some kind of crazy shit like this, right? So
that's probably true.
What's his name?
I don't think he came up with it. I think some other guys came up with it.
You say Zuckerberg?
He's the Zuckerberg.
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 Zuckerberg?
How's that working out?
I don't know, but he's getting more German by the second.
I know, right? And he's also taking and selling it to people.
Mm. So.
Yeah, boy.
It goes, now it's cop against cop at this point, right?
Yeah, cop against
ex-cop. Ex-cop versus fake cop.
Ex-cop versus fake cop.
And fake cop's got a gun. Freddy versus Jason. So he gets a hold of real cop's gun. And then real cop is like still just trying to save lives.
He's just trying to fix.
He tries to boot a couple of them out of there. He's like, just go.
Look at that.
Just bam, bam, bam. So he tosses the car keys.
Yeah, he's like, get in the damn car and go away.
So they do so, and the fucking car blows up.
Explodes.
Yeah.
And kills both them. And that was with the little kid and the
psychic dead Indian
the wife, the newlywed
girl. Yeah, the newlywed gal, yeah.
So they blow up. Kaboom. So now we're...
But hold on. Like, this is the weird part.
This is too weird.
They go and they fucking run over there. They get a fire extinguisher. They put it out. No bodies.
No bodies. Yep. No. So now, as a viewer, this is where. As a viewer, this is again now where our hair stands up a little
You're
bit,
like,
and
what
we go,
is really
"Wait,
going on?
Your hair's
is
not standing
just
up for
super, well, I have hair on my arms.
Oh, that's true.
Anyway. Like, is this just supernatural? This whole time, does none of these people's identity actually matter?
God,
I
so want to. Just
do not.
Like, this is why. So and it's
when
so brilliant.
Bodies go missing. They run around looking for the other bodies because, of course, like, well, that's weird. And they're gone now.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Mom is gone.
Squish
stepdad
dad
is gone. Newlywed husband that got stabbed all up. Gone. Severed head is gone.
And not only are they gone,
Gary Busey,
but there's
bad
no
boy is gone.
But
the bat,
there's
yeah.
no trace of the murder.
Yeah.
None.
Like the walls are cleaned. Everything's shiny. Yeah. No blood. The bat doesn't have anything on it. Like everything is just put back into its place. Yeah.
And that is the point where the viewer realizes this isn't what I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean when I would say that, you know, coming into Act 3, which this was kind of the beginning of, all the stuff you think you've learned from the first two acts is just, it's pulled out from under you right there. And you're like, okay, this is something else. I don't know what this is. I don't think this is dead Indian burial ground. I don't think this is serial killers. I don't think this is just people killing each other. What the hell?
Well, and also, then they also tell us something really, really interesting comes together as all of the characters start comparing notes.
Oh, yeah.
When we start talking about, like, well, you know, in the and then there were none.
Well, this is where I was born. Where were you born? No, it's not that.
Yeah, they say, well, all of us had some sort of, they all had some sort of relation.
They all had the same birthday.
Right. And this one turns out they had the exact freaking birthday on May, 10th?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because one of them just says that, like, you know, can't believe I'm going to, you know, die right before my birthday or something. And the other one's like, yeah, my birthday's coming up, too. Oh, yeah, what day? Oh, yeah, it's this day. Oh, that's mine. So it kind
of... Yeah, all of them have May 10th birthdays, and then it even goes a little further, and I forget how they discover it, is that they all have last names or names that are part of...
John Cusack, when he's searching for clues, this is
states
right
or,
about this point, actually. He
cities,
goes to
right?
the little lockbox where everyone's ID is kept
because
of their hotel
looking at
key,
him,
and he pulls them out and starts going through them, and it's like Caroline, Dakota.
Yeah.
Paris.
And, you know, Paris, you know, whatever.
Actually, it's... Edward Dakota. I got a list of them right here.
Oh, do you? Let's hear some of those. Because they were decent.
Yeah, we got Edward Dakota, Samuel Rhodes, Paris Nevada, George York, Alice York, Timmy York. You can guess which ones they were.
Yeah.
Yep. Larry Washington, Caroline Suzanne. This one I'm not quite sure because I can't quite pronounce it. Virginia Ginny Iziana. Sure. Lou Iziana. So those must have been the newlyweds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Robert Maine. So I'm not sure what's the significance of them all being from...
Just that all their last names were based on states.
Yes.
So it wasn't anything that we needed to hear that tied them together. It was something we needed to hear to... And at this point, let's give the final spoiler alert. Seriously, at this point, if you haven't watched this movie...
Turn.
We are going to ruin
walk
this.
Away now because here it comes.
This is it.
So once again, please enjoy the music for a slight intermission. We're back.
Fuck. Sorry. I'll never get old.
So, this is where we learn that these people aren't like.
It's hard to say, isn't it?
At all what they might be. Just he realizes that this is something that points to the fact that that has to be made up.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the words I'm looking for. If you've got a whole motel full of people and every one of them has a state for a last name or a play on words of a state for a last name, like that has to be fictitious. That's not something that would really happen.
Birthdays,
and then they all have the same birthday.
All being there at the same time. Yeah.
So it's at this point that you start to question the reality of this situation, I guess, because that little factoid is just too much.
Yeah. And at this point, they're also interweaving, going back and forth in storyline to the hotel motel victims, to the stay of execution trial or meeting with this murderer.
Yes. And we have actually already learned it at this point, but we haven't even thought about it till now. And I didn't want to mention it way back at the point when we actually learned it, because then people would start guessing forward to this, which is why I saved it for spoilers. But we have already learned that this guy is being saved from execution because he suffers from dissociative identity disorder, and that he has multiple personalities that reside within him. One of those personalities they feel committed the murders, not him in his true mental state. That's how they're trying to get him off. And
so the doctor's trying to get him to reveal everything and go,
so we need
to get
that.
Rid of these guys because we want it to be you, and you've gotten rid of all of your personalities.
So way earlier, we learned he has those personalities, and we think one of those personalities killed the people he's going on trial for. Now we learn, that they're trying to collide all these personalities together. And apparently, I did a little bit of Google Foo myself, there is some thought into if you can take someone who has multiple personalities or whatever, if you can have them collide in some way, you can have some of them go away. Because it's a shock to the system, because the brain invents a personality to keep itself from a trauma. It says, whatever just happened was too much to take, so I'm not going to see it as me, I'm going to see it as somebody else. And that memory now belongs to that guy or whatever. You know, that's a very baseline amateur way of, I guess, describing what's a really severe thing to have happen. So the thought is, if you have multiple of those personalities and they can meet, your brain goes, that shouldn't happen because that one's me too. So he gets rid of one of them.
What's the little thing he says at the beginning and they say at the end, the little saying or whatever like that?
As I was going up the stairs, I met a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. I wish he'd go away.
Yeah.
I don't know why I remember that, but yeah. And he says, well, that's just something I heard as a kid.
Yeah.
It's actually part of a poem.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And it became a song, I guess. But it's really cool. Like, I've read it a lot.
Ties right into the movie.
When people say, like, write a short, you know, scary story. I've seen that retyped as that, because that is kind
of
weird.
Yeah, and I think in the movie, one of the characters actually claimed that they wrote it when they were young.
Yeah, he says, I heard it when I was young. Yeah. He says, I heard it when I was young. But if you think about it, that is exactly what is about to happen to this guy, is that he has met people that aren't there.
Yep.
They, you know, still aren't there today.
But he wishes they would go away.
And here's where we're going to dive into the real pairing of our beer for tonight, this duality message, which is that even in this film, what we have seen as two things, as a guy up for his stay of execution and 10 people fighting for their life in a motel against some unknown evil, mm-hmm. it's actually just the same story. And we're seeing the duality of that one story. And the story is every single thing we're watching is occurring between his personalities in his brain.
Yep. There's no hotel. There's no...
At this meeting.
Yeah.
To save his life. And the doctors are purposely clashing his identities together to eliminate them one by one until the only thing left should...
Be him.
Be him.
Yeah.
And then you're, okay,
yeah.
We're going to put you in a mental institution.
And then he gets to, yeah, he doesn't die. I mean, he's not getting free or anything.
Yeah, no, but he's going to go to, yeah, exactly.
And I like that. And in fact, they say, look, man, we have been here with you. And we have seen a lot of the personalities die. And there's just like one more that we need you to take care of, bro, because we need you to know that you're the one that survives.
Yep.
And then they flash back to the actual battle between...
The two cops.
Going at
it. Exactly.
And they're like, you know, these personalities have to kill each other. And we've got basically three people left. We've got the cop, the convict dressed as a cop.
And the hooker.
And our Orange Grove hooker.
Yeah.
And... Through this whole thing, we can tell that Cusack has a soft spot for this Orange Grove hooker, and she is also the only one that has done nothing bad to anyone. She hasn't.
She spent most of the time trying to protect the kid from all the crap that was going on.
She's super sweet. She's super nice. She's like,
she's a hooker with a heart of gold, dude.
Cusack's whole thing right now is just like save her, get her, you know, out of this mess.
Through college.
So when it comes time for him to really face off with Leota. It's not like, oh, let me see if I can get him and get out of here. Because Cusack is hearing in his head at this point the conversations that are happening at the meeting. Only one of these personalities can survive. And he starts kind of realizing in his gut, like, either I'm going crazy or this is what's happening and I need to, like, obliterate this other guy. And he doesn't do it in some sneaky way where he can escape.
No, it's like fucking Terminator, the T-800 and the T-1000.
He just walks around the corner with
the
gun out
bomb.
And takes some bullets. And then give some bullets.
Yep. True gangster style, like Ray Liotta would have loved to have got out. Do we? I mean, I feel like we've let a lot out, and we've given plenty of warning.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to do the very last.
No, the very last one, absolutely not, because that's super cool. But I wonder if we could talk about the like his reflection.
Sure, absolutely.
Because I thought that was brilliant. Really cool too,
because he is the one at surface. Well, no, right,
that's what I'm saying is when. Switch to Leota in the confined, shackled chair, you know? It's like, that's where you start seeing...
Cusack.
And he's like, you're like, what's going on there? And then you see, he starts freaking out about, where's my face? What's wrong with my face? And you see him in the window, the reflection, and he's like, he's the normal dude.
Yeah, I love
that. Like, yeah, it was
Cusack kind of wakes up in this situation, and it's like, where am I?
Yeah, you see Cusack's face...
He's
shackled. He's in front of these judges.
And that's when they end in the mirror.
Yeah, he's like, here's what's going on. You know, we're trying to do this. They show him the mirror, and he sees the other guy. I can't remember the actor's name now again.
Malcolm.
He's
Pruitt Taylor Vince.
He sees, you know, this is a bald guy with eyes that are flashing. He's kind of a resemblance to you.
I keep thinking about it. I'm like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And he fucking... I mean, can you imagine that?
You don't
that?
Have a lazy eye, though.
Can you imagine that?
Not yet.
But no, fucking imagine this. So, Aaron, you, all your life, think that you look like Rob Lowe.
No, it's Jason Statham.
Actually, for the record, he thinks he looks like Jason Statham.
First off, it's Jason Statham.
Yeah. Get it right, dude.
And I know not in the physique.
What I really love
was the peanut gallery giggle from the other room.
Yeah, fucking
Dan's
background starts laughing.
Yeah.
You're lame.
No, somebody gives you a mirror... But can you imagine that mind fuck? I mean, that alone would cause you to go back into all your other identities. Fuck that. I don't want to look like Aaron. I want to go back to my 13.
I want to be John Cusack again. Yeah.
I want to be the Rob Lowe. Yeah.
He gets away with standing in front of yards. Yeah.
With a boombox.
Absolutely. So that is a cool point. And why I think that's so cool that happens is that pretty much shatters the foundation of that persona, that personality, while that personality is still fully engaged in this motel thing that's happening.
Yeah.
So it really does let John Cusack's character know, you know, you're not real.
Right. No, this and is it kind of kills him. So that leaves this...
So he takes out Leota.
Middle-aged man in the mentality of a a hooker by the name of Paris.
Yeah. Right? Leota takes him out. He takes out Leota, and we have only Paris.
Yeah.
The most innocent of his personalities. They've gotten rid of all of his personalities that will do harm.
Yeah. And I thought that the film And Then There Were None had a really interesting ending, you know, where it was the person that was doing all the murders faked their death and then came back.
Yeah.
And they weren't dead, and they, in fact, had killed everybody. You just
ruined, like, one of the world's top-selling books of all time.
Well, you know. We did warn spoilers.
It has been out for 70 years. You had your shot.
So I love the fact book club, that dude. That ending, and I love the fact that the ending of this movie is equally cool.
Yes. And that ending of And Then There Were None has been done in all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's been tweaked for, like, Happy Birthday to Me. It's been tweaked for, like, April Fool's Day. I mean, it's been tweaked for even, like,
let's the not forget, And Then There Were Fewer from Family Guy.
Also true. So, I mean, that's been played on a bunch. And that's what I think is so cool about this movie is that it could take something that was already, like, fantastic and super complicated with a great reveal and then up it a notch or two. And we're not going to tell you where the film goes from there, but we'll just suffice it to say that there's still some twist left. Yeah, you haven't gone on the full ride, even at this point. Even
this
at the
has
happy
been
ending.
One of the movies we've done on this podcast that I highly, highly recommend finding this movie and watching
Absolutely.
Honestly,
I wrote down a quote from Roger Ebert's review of this film because I thought he said it really, really well, and I didn't want to like paraphrase it and take it as my own. So I'm giving him the credit here. He said he's seen a lot of movies that are intriguing for the first two acts and then go on autopilot with a formula ending. Identity is a rarity, a movie that seems to be on autopilot for the first two acts and then reveals that it was not, with a third act that causes us to rethink everything that has gone before. It's ingenious how simple and yet how devious the solution is.
Yeah.
I think that's
I agree.
That's it.
It's
sentences.
More than just an entertaining thriller. It really is something very highly original. Yeah, it was kind of a sleeper for me because I don't know when I saw it or how I saw it, but I was completely surprised because I saw it out of the blue. I never heard anything about it. It was really good. Yeah,
like Juan said, he and I ran off and we watched it in the theater, and it was super, super good. And I want to say I went back another time, but I remember it was one of those things where, like, you know, you hear about the DVD release and you were like, oh, I'll be there Tuesday.
Oh, I bought it. Yeah, right when it came out, I bought it and I watched it.
And for a while, it was on my rotation of just, you know, that.
Yeah, me too. I've probably seen about 7 or 8 times, you know, since I've owned it.
This is when I love the fact that Grace is still kind of, you know, an embryo. Because
I remember seeing previews for this. You know, I didn't go see it. No, I remember when this was coming out and everything. I just don't remember. I didn't go see it in theaters.
But I mean, that's what's so cool.
I'm pretty sure I saw it at some point.
His birthday gifts back.
Right? Yeah, give me those back.
Well, he drank one.
I already drank
one.
I'm going to drink them all real quick.
What'd you drink? Fuller's Golden.
No, just the fact that there's some stuff that we can, you know, I can introduce that might be new to you.
All right. Well, I'm just going to find some weird shit that you haven't seen.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the thing. Oh, yeah, buddy. I watched a bunch of weird shit. That's how I got on this track.
First off, Grace
is an old soul. So, like, her history of horror and stuff is.
And I'm sorry, I got addicted to this shit starting with fucking Hitchcock and the classics. So, don't give me that embryo bullshit.
Well, we got hooked on this shit when it was still just being told around fires.
Well, that's true.
He's got me there. When it was really happening during the Roman Barbarian Wars.
Shit. Roman Barbarian Wars.
I'm going to not even touch that.
I'm going to Google that. I don't think that
you
was
do
real.
That. No, it happened. Yeah.
Was that in Conan?
Anyways. There's still more that happens in this film. We're not going to touch on that.
Yeah, there's at least another.
Hopefully, if you've made it this far and you've seen it by now, so you know exactly what we're talking about. And
I wouldn't be surprised, though, that there's a handful of people that haven't. More than a handful. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
I think there's quite a few.
Well, I think there's going to be a lot that haven't seen it. But I mean, if you've listened this far and you still haven't watched it, then shame on you.
Catch
it. First off, but
we advised you.
Still, go watch it. Because like I was saying at the beginning of this whole thing, you know, we've seen it numerous times. And watching it again, you're loving it just as much.
Yeah, I still want to go back and rewatch it.
Yeah.
To catch all the shit that I didn't catch. Because there's so many little things that are interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
That until you know the whole reveal...
Yeah.
You're not looking for those things. So now that it's fresh in my head, I want to go back and I want to watch it because I'm a nerd and I like seeing those little connections and those little clues and those little hints and things like that. I love that in horror movies.
Did we talk about the actual manager of the hotel?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or was I? Yeah. I think you were the bagno.
Yeah. You were in the loop.
So, you know, I watched it last night in preparation for this, and then sat down today to like write some notes about it and stuff. And I watched it again, and I noticed things today that I didn't notice last night.
Yeah, that's the thing is, I want to watch it while it's still fresh in my head and rewatch it for that reason.
Definitely. Yeah, well, and you have to. This movie like demands a second watch, even if you've already seen it, because you've seen it once and you know where it's going and you know all of that. Now go watch how it got there. Watch like how finely crafted that was and the misdirection and the places where you go, oh, man, I totally thought – this was what was happening here. And
it's listen not to the even... music, because the music does the music tells a lot of the story. Super good.
That's some of the things that really interest me about the movie making is like you're saying, looking at the choices they made and stuff, because the killer originally was supposed to be a female teacher from Australia. And they nixed that because...
You mean the person at the meeting? The person being reprieved?
Yeah. Okay, exactly. Yeah. In the first draft, the killer was a... Australian teacher. And there's like, well, how could she be a killer if she was like part of the PTA and shit, you know?
Well, because she's got 10 personalities in her head. Yeah. I can see why they would want to do that, because that's like not who you think it would be.
At all. Yeah. But instead they got fucking heartthrob Cusack.
Well, he's not.
Which equally he's put not the killer, us though. Off guard.
But he's not the killer.
It's no, but
Pruitt Taylor Vince is the real guy.
Yeah, super, super fun movie, though.
Yeah.
I'm not sure fun would be the right word. You know what
I'm very glad we did it.
Yeah.
Very well made.
Yeah.
And it was, at first when I was thinking about it, I was like, well, it's not really a horror movie, but you know what? It has so many elements that are so engaging, and it's got your blood and guts, it's got your suspense, and it's smart.
Well, and that's always been like a big, you know, is it? Like, horror is Silence of the Lambs horror? Is Seven horror? You know, is Predator horror? Yeah. Before watching it last night, I kind of thought, it's not really.
That's what I was thinking too. But until I
watched it, and I was like, "This is a freaking slasher movie." Yeah.
Well, we did Shallows. We did The Babadook, which isn't a horror.
Sure, not once you know the reveal. Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, no, we're just. I mean, I think we bring some really interesting.
Well, and I've mentioned it on this podcast before, and I'll mention it again now because I think it's coming down the pipe soonish. Wait Until Dark. With Audrey Hepburn is definitely coming for us. We're going to talk about that. I know that's one that not a lot of people have seen.
And I think Grace has got to do a nod to her favorite Hitchcock, too.
Absolutely.
That'll be amazing. Yeah.
I have to pick one?
Yeah. Well, you know, for now.
Okay.
Then we'll come back around.
Originally, you know, I wish I had thought about this earlier, but we came across the duality beer, and I thought that was great. But then on the way over, I thought, oh, man, what if we actually all picked a beer that we – was our number one like beer that we identified with.
That's harder than picking a Hitchcock.
And then we drank it and tried to figure out whose beer it was. Whose beer the alter ego belonged to.
You have one for your birthday.
Yes, I do.
Yes, I do.
There you go.
But we would have all known Guinness was Grace, so.
No, that's not the beer that represents me.
No? Yeah. Which one is it?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
Okay, how about this?
I can't do that on the fly.
If you only had one beer to drink for the rest of your life...
That's tough.
Mine's a toss-up between this one and Pallet Jack.
Fucking Pallet Jack.
Block 15, Sticky Hands, or Pallet Jack for you?
Yeah. My two favorite IPAs.
Yeah, I don't know for me. I would say if I have to drink it for the rest of my life.
Rest of your life.
It's probably not going to be my favorite beer. You know what I mean?
So you'd rather be stuck for the rest of your life with something you don't like.
No, with that. No. Not with something I don't like. Just maybe not the premier top favorite. Like, what if my premier top favorite beer of all time was a sour? Am I going to want to drink a sour beer only for the rest of my life?
I don't want to probably drink not. It once during the podcast.
So, like, you know, my brain immediately thinks, like, oh, yeah, you know, Zombie Dust from Three Floyds. Because that was, like, that to me is, like, perfection
for that
in glass,
kind of beer, it would be Guinness for me.
Yeah.
Because I can drink that beer 1,000 times.
See,
and
that's
be
what
fine.
I'm saying. That would probably be the wiser choice. Like, for me, it might
it's
be something.
It's always good.
Like.
But it's always just a fallback, and it's fine.
Like, I might rather do, like, an Ex Novo.
I think it's pretty obvious what mine would be.
Maybe Ecliptic's Starburst.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to pick Starburst. I could drink
that
for
the
rest
of my life. See, I don't even know that I'd want it to be an IPA.
I could drink Fort George's 1811 for the rest of my life.
I love IPAs, but if that was what I had to drink all the time and only what I had to drink, I go through weird phases where I don't feel like hops.
Now
I love IPAs.
Here's the twist. Here's the twist to it.
Okay.
Because mine would be
And then like this movie, I will have another twist.
We all know what Lee's is, so that's fine. So.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so it's a given.
If you don't know what Lee's is.
I've been pretty transparent there. But yeah, I mean, I could drink old Tingston all the time. Old like Tingston, if it was like, you know, once every
old Tingston. Is that like Tingston?
Tingston's old peculiar.
That's my favorite. I don't know what
But yeah, you know, once every couple of weeks or something like that for the rest of your life.
Once every couple of weeks.
I'm just saying it doesn't have to be every day.
It doesn't have to be every day. No, what you're saying is it's not every day.
But if that's the only beer you can have, you're only going to have beer once every couple.
Don't
of weeks.
Don't make me ask you what horror movie you would. That's only my question. Get to watch.
That was my next question.
I knew it would be
only horror movie you can watch. You can watch every comedy. Is the one horror movie if you had to watch it, and again, not every day, but it's the only one you can watch.
That's I mean, mine's super tough.
Mine's Halloween for me. Yeah, Halloween 78.
Mine would have to be American Werewolf.
I think Halloween 78 is the only movie I've seen over 100 times. Mm. Some other ones probably push them 50, 60, but...
You know, given some time to really think about it, or you know, might come up with something different, but...
What was yours?
I don't know if it would be.
Really? American Werewolf.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'd want something that I could
goddamn rhyme would be stuck in my head all the time.
Robert England, I hope you're listening to this.
And that means every time you watched a horror movie, you would have to see that stupid blow-up mom get sucked through that window.
Or Long-Arm Freddy. Clown
Long-Arm Freddy.
Yes.
Like, I love that movie. Would get me, it's Long-Arm but Freddy. I don't know that I would want that to be the only horror movie I could ever watch again.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would have to multi-purpose it because
I'll have to think about that, and I'll have to think about that beer representing thing.
The birds would be way up there for me.
Rurundo would be up there for me.
Okay.
If I got to watch one, an only one, I got to multi-purpose it. I'd want something with boobs so I could fire off some knuckle children once in a while. Really make it happen.
So you see, Zombievers
maybe, or the new Friday the 13th. It's got some choice boobage in it.
Choice boobage.
Wow.
Huh. All right.
Nice. Well, now I know what I'm going to engrave on your next piece of glass right now.
I think we're identifying a lot of identities in this group tonight.
Anyway.
Yeah.
There's boobage, but then there's choice boobage.
That's the duality.
The Quigleys.
That's the duality.
Of the all right. Well, before this gets any weirder. highest recommendation all around for identity and highest recommendation all around for urban family brewing.
Very good.
Yeah, this duality is great, but all their beers are... really amazing.
Yeah, the Braca Stout is super good. What's the milk stout that they had that was all over the place recently? I can't remember now. Anyways, I've had some great beers from Urban Family. Check them out. Find their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Go to your bottle shop. And actually, for the quality it is and the fact that they push out a lot of 750s, it's extremely affordable for how good it is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yes.
Well, it's been fun, guys.
Absolutely. All right. We will catch you guys soon.
Peace.
Cheers. Blue, ha, ha, ha.